This past year, I received a book that is in some ways the saddest book I have ever seen. This is the book. It's called Synagogues Without Jews. It was written by a husband and wife who traveled all over the world and took pictures of synagogues that belonged to communities which are gone. Of course, in some way, one's reaction could be, why is it so sad? It's just a building. But there is an emptiness to it, a pain that Jews feel, and in fact was felt as far back as the Talmud, which teaches that if a synagogue is destroyed, one should leave the ground untouched and let the grass grow as a sign of sadness. It is the promise of sanctity that is gone. A synagogue that is empty recalls the opening words of Lamentations of Echa, Echa Yashva Badad, how does the city sit solitary that was full of people? She has become a widow. And one asks oneself, in looking at the magnificent interiors and the row upon row of empty seats that are never to be filled again, what should we do? These halls that held communities, that saw them sway and heard them sing, they are empty, and the world that nurtured them is gone, and there is only one response that matters. Only one thing to do that makes a difference, and that is to create synagogues that will stand in for those that were lost. Museums and monuments are fine, but without the voices of prayer, without the sounds of school children, you have only nostalgia and not renewal. The synagogue, the Beit Knesset, the house of gathering, has been the home of the Jewish people for millennia, for thousands of years. A place of music, of community, and of learning. And the most important message tonight is that the past doesn't live in this book, it lives in this place. Here is where that past lives. Here, where we struggle to give birth to new ways of hearing old messages. And by the way, some of the things that seem new are not so new. They're really quite old. Remember, in the temple in Jerusalem, there was music. Music is quite old in synagogues, not new. Not only that, but this year I read through Lee Levine's long and scholarly work on ancient synagogues, and I will tell you a secret that will not be a secret after I tell you, which is every ancient synagogue they have excavated, every single one without exception, I'll tell you what they have never found. They have never found a separate section for women to sit. Never. They have even found seats that were dedicated by women. That was their fixed seat, but it was always, as it is tonight, men and women together. And if you think, well, it's different because of the numbers, in the great synagogue in Alexandria, when someone said a blessing, you know what they did at the end of the blessing? They waved the flag so that people in the back would know when to say Amen. We just substituted a microphone. But the impulses are the same. The idea is the same. And this, on this 100th year of Sinai Temple, it is time to think together about how we can carry on the work. This is, by the way, in lots of ways, a remarkable place. This is a synagogue that has existed for 100 years and never had a breakaway. You should call the anthropologists on this one. There was never a group of Jews that opened up a synagogue down the street because they didn't want to stay at this one. We have done very good work in recent years. In the past 8 to 9 years, the synagogue has grown from a little over 1,100 members to almost 1,900 members. Our programs have grown. They're a model for synagogues across the country. This Shabbat, which is not untypical, 120 religious students will be coming here from all different backgrounds to attend our service and to hear afterwards about what we believe and why we believe it. Earlier this year, we had Fulbright scholars from all over the world, from China, Korea, from Japan, from Jordan, from Egypt, who came to our Friday Night Live service and stayed afterwards to talk about faith. Our halls are filled, as you heard, with the voices of school children. We have great programs, we have great schools, but we also have great plans. How do we reinvent what was lost? Over this past year, with the staff and the Centennial Committee, we have created a vision for what it is we want to do with our 100 years and beyond. In what way can we make the history of this institution a prelude to something bigger and better and greater? Not for the sake of size, but for the sake of soul. We want to make a Beit Midrash, a place where any Jew can study at any time when they come into this building. There should always be learning and teachers. A parenting center. More than a mommy and me, but something about Jewish parenting. How do you teach? How do you bring your children through this world so that people who come here understand from those first fragile moments how to nurture a Jewish family? I'd like to have a counseling center, because people are in trouble and need advice and need guidance. And sometimes they need it from people who are professionally trained. And it's hard at times to find someone who is professionally trained who also has Jewish knowledge and neshama and soul. And you ought to be able to go to your synagogue and have some short-term guidance from people who know what they are talking about and who are part of your community and who care for you. We want to be able to teach people not only in the synagogue, but at home. One thing that our ancestors did not dream of was online learning. After all, we are in Los Angeles. And even though it is true that there is a Sinai Temple website, and a good one, where, by the way, among other things, you can hear the sermons every week so that you can listen to them again after you've heard them on Shabbat morning services. Just to review. But there should be much more. We should be able to have courses and interactive communities. We've been contacted by various outlets who've talked about somehow creating of the services or the learning or the classrooms or the events some kind of television or media or streaming so that people in small communities who don't have what we have here will be able to learn with us. I get emails all the time from Jews all over the country who ask where they can find this or that, how they can learn this, what book should they go to. And we could do that not only for Jews in our own country, but for Jews abroad. In order to do all these things, we will also have to, in one way or another, expand our space, find a place to grow into. There ought to be, for example, a place when you come into the synagogue where you can sit and have a cup of coffee and talk to other people who are here. We have hundreds of parents who drop their children off every day and then they leave. Because unless it is Thursday morning and they're staying for Torah class, 8:15 on Thursday mornings, or they have a specific meeting, there is no place to gather. It's a Beit Knesset. It should be a community. Community in the 21st century means coffee. And we are a community not only on Shabbat, but all the time. A sacred community. A place to learn and to grow and to share knowledge and to share wisdom. We no longer live in the kind of integrated communities that our grandparents and great-grandparents lived in. But we can create such a community. We can greatly expand our adult education program. I'll be speaking in just a second about some of the things that are going to be happening this year. But we are doing remarkable things, and we could do much more. And we should feel lucky. Not every place can do such things. A friend of mine, Rabbi Jack Reamer, likes to say that his synagogue can't really afford adult education speakers, so in order to save them the money, he just changes his mind every week. And that way they get a range of views. But we could and will bring in the best and the brightest in the Jewish world, not only from here, but from Israel, from Europe. Voices that need to be heard and can have a platform here, sometimes in concert with other wonderful institutions in Los Angeles, and sometimes as part of our centennial growth. We have wonderful schools, but they can be better. Our religious school, our preschool, even our crown jewel of Sinai Akiba, good as they are, great as they can be better. And finally, not only inreach, but outreach to Jews and to non-Jews. I spoke about this on Rosh Hashanah, and I won't go into any great detail again. But it is part of our responsibility to take care of ourselves and to care for the world. I know sometimes when I ask people to give to a synagogue, they say, well, there are so many competing claims on my attention. And it's true, there are. But when you create a Jewish soul, you are making an investment in fixing the world. I want to tell you some of the things that would not have happened if there were not a Sinai Temple. We would not have raised millions of dollars for the victims of terror in Israel. We would not have given a push to the Jewish World Watch, which protests the horrors of Darfur. We would not have raised well over $1 million to help the Jews of Argentina and gotten a matching grant from Federation to help them in their time of need. We wouldn't have had the collections of money and goods that we sent and continue to send to the victims of Katrina. We would not have had a mitzvah day where people spread out all over Los Angeles and make connections with other synagogues and institutions. And we would not have had a place that kept these places alive. You want to memorialize what has happened to our people? You can build 1,000 museums. But if there are no voices in the synagogue, the Shoah will be forgotten. We are the ones who keep that memory alive because we are the ones who remember what was lost. This year, in the centennial year, we are doing some remarkable things. We're having the most exciting Jewish writers in the country. Jonathan Safran Foer, his movie just came out of his first book, Everything is Illuminated, and his wife, Nicole Krauss, whose new book is a bestseller, are both coming in their only appearance as a couple. Michael Chabon, who won the Pulitzer Prize for Cavalier and Clay, is coming with his wife, Ayelet Waldman, who is a mystery writer. And those and other programs, the Atid Night of Comedians, the Final Dinner, about which you will hear much more, which is a remarkable event, unlike any synagogue dinner you have ever been to in your life. All those things are great. But we're also having, in addition to renowned Jewish scholars like Reuven Kimmelman, we're bringing Deborah Lipstadt, who won that crucial libel trial in England over David Irving, the Holocaust denier. And at the end of the year, although he has not done scholar in residence weekends for decades, in honor of the 100th anniversary of Sinai Temple, Elie Wiesel will be here for a weekend to teach and to take part in a magnificent event. We will be having a citywide essay contest among Jewish teenagers, high school students. What question would you ask Elie Wiesel? The winners will be announced that day, and they will come up on the stage and get to ask him their questions. As the rest of us listen and watch to a living voice of the Jewish past teach the Jewish future. That happens because we understand what it is to have synagogues without Jews. And we know what it is to build synagogues that make Jews. We have begun speaking to people about this centennial campaign and been overwhelmed with the response. And this is just the beginning. The names of many of the people who have responded so generously already are listed outside next to the office, and you can see them as you leave. Gifts of tremendous generosity, including a wonderful gift that I am happy to announce from Ruth Ziegler that dedicates this sanctuary now that you are sitting in as the Ruth and Alan Ziegler Sanctuary of Sinai Temple. And together with that gift, and other gifts of tremendous generosity. I don't like to talk numbers on Kol Nidre. It seems to me unseemly, so I will just say 2/3 of Chai. It doesn't say you can't talk fractions, actually. Is the beginning of a campaign which has already, by the way, left this wonderful institution without a mortgage. And that alone is a remarkable claim for any nonprofit institution in this world to make. And the reason that we say that, look, there is a story in the Jerusalem Talmud about two men who walk by the ruins of an ancient synagogue. And one of them looks at it and he says, Kama mamon shichu avotenu kan. How much money, I wonder, did our ancestors sink into this place? And the other one corrects him, and he says, that's not the question. The question is, Kama Nefashot Shikhu Avotenu Khan. How many souls did our ancestors invest in this place? When I look at the pictures in this book, when I read about rabbis thousands of years ago walking by a synagogue, that he's no longer there, I know that these places had nothing. No learning, no love, no passion, no knowledge, no dreams, no vision that we can't have. There is nothing that we haven't learned from them that we can't create. Why do synagogues matter? Because all the institutions in Jewish life serve Jews, but synagogues make Jews. We take children who come to us knowing little, knowing nothing, and we teach them and train their parents and their grandparents. And we make Jews. And I hope it won't sound too chauvinistic if I say that those Jews that are made make the world better. When you look at any charity, any cause, in the arts, in humanitarian relief, in anything, you see a wildly disproportionate number of Jewish names. It is no coincidence and no mistake. It's because somewhere in the lineage of that person, they learned what we teach here. And if you want people to care tomorrow and next week and the week after that and the year after that, then help us. Because we will make Jews that will make you proud. And we will make Jews that will help save the world. The silence of the synagogues in this book is the silence of the children who are not there. The children who are gone. But we have children here, and they deserve the best we can give them. They deserve to understand how to draw themselves up before a world that is sometimes friendly and sometimes hostile, and say with pride, Hineni, I am here. And that's why, in this centennial year, we are creating the Sinai Center for Jewish Life and Learning. So that we can embrace all the phases of life, so that 100 years from now, your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren will have a place to learn and to grow. We venerate the past in our tradition. We pay it respect. We honor it. But we create the future. And that is our task. It is our synagogue's calling to re-enchant the world. To let people see miracles again. Believe me, had you been there 100 years ago, when that first small group planned a nascent synagogue and knew that it would come to this, you'd say it's a miracle. I don't know, said Santayana, who first spotted water, but I know it wasn't a fish. Because sometimes when you're in the middle of something, you don't see it. So let me tell you the good part of standing up here. I can see it. And it's a miracle. I mentioned on Rosh Hashanah that a friend of mine told me once that a congregant said to him, I'm not going to come to synagogue this Rosh Hashanah because really everything I want from God I can ask from home. And my friend said to him, you're right. But did it ever occur to you that maybe there's something that God wants to ask of you? We come here not only to ask, but to be asked. Not only to petition, but to be charged with our mission in this world. And this is our mission. Ralph Cook said it beautifully a century ago. Lechadesh et hayashan ulechadesh et hachadash. To renew the old and to sanctify the new. We are in the business of sanctification and of memory. Our centennial slogan is preserving the past and building the future. I hope that you will join us in this task and in this quest, and in the coming year, in the memory of those who are no longer here, and with the promise of those who are not yet here, may we be blessed with vision, with passion, with kindness, and with peace. Amen.